You know, there is this really fascinating concept in structural engineering called an invisible tripwire.
Oh, yeah.
It's the idea that you can build this massive state-of-the-art bridge, right? Like completely sound in its own design. You're using the absolute best materials available. But if the bedrock a mile down shifts even a fraction of an inch, the whole thing can just it can just buckle.
Totally.
You did everything right. Your calculations were perfect, but you are brought down by a foundation you didn't even realize you were resting on.
It's such a perfect metaphor.
Right. So, welcome to today's Deep Dive Learner. We are taking a close look at a massive piece of unseen systemic risk today. And honestly, even if you aren't in the finance or the property game, this is an absolute masterclass in how a rule change in one industry can completely blindside another.
Yeah, it really is a perfect case study in interconnected systems. I mean, we spend so much time optimizing our own workflows, right? We just forget what happens when one external link in the chain,
Right, a link we don't even control.
exactly, when that link is suddenly asked to carry a totally new kind of weight.
Okay, let's unpack this because when I was reading through our source material for today, I hit this core paradox that honestly made me stop in my tracks.
Yeah, the paradox is wild.
It really is. So we are looking at a highly strategic article from the Broker Times. It's dated May 25, 2026, written by Jennifer Austin.
Agreed.
It is. It's titled "The 1 July AUSTRAC Reform Ripple: Why Your Referral Partners Just Got Riskier." And our mission here is to understand the hidden ripple effects of Australia's anti-money laundering and counterterrorism financing, or AML/CTF Tranche 2 reforms.
Which sounds incredibly dry, but I promise it's not.
Oh, it's not dry at all. Because more importantly, we're going to look at how smart professionals are taking what looks like a massive administrative nightmare and just turning it into a commercial moat.
Taking a regulatory burden and weaponizing it into a competitive advantage. I mean, that is the pivot every business operator wants to master.
Exactly.
But to get there, you really have to understand the specific threat first.
Right. And here is that paradox I mentioned. On July 1st, 2026, these new AUSTRAC regulations hit the market. Now, mortgage brokers are already compliant.
Right, they fall under tranche one.
Yeah, tranche one of these rules, meaning they have been doing this intense financial reporting and identity verification for years already. So theoretically, they have zero new obligations.
Not a single extra piece of paperwork for them.
Exactly. Yet Jennifer Austin warns in no uncertain terms that brokers who ignore this July 1 date will watch their businesses completely grind to a halt. So, I mean, how does a law that doesn't apply to you destroy your business?
Well, what's fascinating here is that we have to stop looking at this as a compliance problem.
Okay.
If you view it strictly through the lens of legal obligation, the broker is totally fine. They get a gold star.
Right. AUSTRAC is happy with them.
Yep. But this isn't a compliance problem. It's a pipeline problem.
Yeah.
To really understand the threat, you have to look at the staggering scale of what happens on July 1st.
Lay it out for us.
We are talking about roughly 100,000 new entities suddenly being dragged into the AUSTRAC regulatory regime.
Wait, 100,000 distinct businesses.
Give or take, yeah. The legislation targets what they call designated non-financial businesses and professions.
Which means who, practically speaking?
Practically speaking, that means your lawyers, conveyancers, accountants, real estate agents. They all have to formally enroll with the government by July 29, 2026.
Wow.
Yeah, it represents a 6 times increase in the regulated population. The regulator's footprint is literally multiplying by 6, basically overnight.
That is a massive macroeconomic shift. But let's bring this down to earth for a second.
Sure.
Let's talk about the day-to-day reality on the ground, because the article moves from this huge legislative change to the practical impact on like a normal Tuesday.
Right. What does it actually look like?
Yeah, why does a conveyancer suddenly getting swamped with new paperwork ruin a mortgage broker's week?
Because a broker does not operate in a vacuum. Let's look at the actual obligations these new Tranche 2 entities are facing. From July 1, they can't just operate on a handshake anymore. They have to implement written AML/CTF risk programs.
Okay, more paperwork.
Lots more. They have to conduct formal customer risk assessments. They must perform customer due diligence, or CDD, on every single engagement. And they have to submit suspicious matter reports to the federal government when applicable.
Okay, let's do a quick explain it like I'm five on that. Specifically, the customer due diligence part.
Yeah, the CDD.
Because if I'm a real estate agent or a conveyancer, haven't I always checked people's IDs? Like, how is this different from just asking for a driver's license before a property settlement?
Well, that's the trap a lot of these businesses are falling into right now. They're thinking it's just a photocopied ID.
Right.
But customer due diligence under this federal regime requires you to independently verify the identity of the customer. And you also have to understand the actual nature and purpose of the business relationship.
The actual nature.
Yeah. And assess the specific risk that this person might be laundering money or, you know, financing terrorism. So for an accountant dealing with an investment property, that might mean digging through layers of a family trust just to find the ultimate beneficial owner.
Which takes a ton of time.
Exactly. It means running names against international sanctions lists. And all of this has to be documented perfectly before they can legally perform their core service.
It's like building a house. Like, you might be the general contractor, and you might have all your building permits perfectly in order.
Right.
Your blueprints are flawless. Your crew is ready to go.
But if your plumber and your electrician are suddenly buried in completely new government red tape.
Yes.
And they can't get their own municipal sign-offs, your house isn't getting finished. The drywall simply can't go up. The whole site freezes.
Yes, exactly. You are entirely dependent on their clearance. Now, place that requirement into the real-world timeline of a property settlement.
It gets messy.
It really does. A residential settlement always involves a conveyancer or a solicitor. Investment files almost always involve an accountant. Every transaction has a real estate agent. So if the broker finishes all their finance work in week one, but the conveyancer hasn't finished their new complicated customer due diligence steps by week six,
the settlement stalls. It just stops.
Right. But let me push back on this for a second.
Okay.
Is this just administrative whining? Like, oh no, we have to fill out an extra form. The settlement is delayed by an afternoon. Or are we talking about a real existential threat to a broker's income here?
No, the author makes a very compelling case that it is a severe threat, particularly in the short term, because of the friction it introduces.
The friction.
Yeah. This extra layer of process sits on top of every single transaction in the country. The article explicitly warns that turnaround times will blow out significantly in July and August as these new procedures bed in.
So everyone is just going to be moving slower.
Much slower. Imagine an accountant who for years just relied on the financial information the broker already collected.
Right, they just shared files.
Exactly. Now, under threat of federal penalty, that accountant suddenly has to demand extra independent borrower documents. It stops the clock on the whole deal.
Which is terrifying because as a broker, you don't control that accountant.
You have zero leverage over them.
So, since the threat is coming from outside the house, how does a smart operator actually measure and mitigate that risk before disaster strikes? The article lays out a specific framework for this, right? Evaluating external partners.
Yeah, it frames the period leading up to July 1 as the time for a referral partner audit.
Referral partner audit.
Okay.
Instead of just hoping your external network figures it out, you have to actively evaluate them. The first thing you need to look at is their basic readiness.
Okay, question one, are they ready?
Right. Do they have a confirmed enrollment plan? Do they have a written AML program? And is their staff actually trained?
Because if a conveyancing firm is staying totally silent right now, just hoping this goes away, that's a massive red flag.
Huge red flag. Silence indicates a total lack of operational maturity.
It absolutely does. Mm-hmm. The firms that are actively updating their engagement letters right now, publishing transition notes on their websites, proactively talking to brokers about the upcoming changes.
The ones leaning into it.
Exactly. Those are the safe bets. They're proving they can handle regulatory weight.
Okay, so that's readiness. The next thing the article tells us to audit is the friction of service standards.
Right. How painful is it going to be for the client?
Yeah, and there is a great example here. Will a conveyancer suddenly require the borrower to physically present a photo ID in person? Or will there be new 20-page customer questionnaires?
Which clients hate?
Oh, they despise it.
Yeah.
Because if a client thinks they are completely done with the paperwork and then suddenly have to take a morning off work to drive across town to show a passport to a solicitor, that's a terrible client experience.
And it directly impacts the broker's workflow and reputation, even if it totally isn't their fault.
Exactly.
The broker needs to know about that friction point before the first deal stalls so they can manage the client's expectations up front.
Right. You have to prep them.
Yeah. And you also have to watch out for fee schedule changes. That's the third question.
Oh, because compliance isn't free.
Compliance costs serious money. New software, new staff training, audits. Are those costs being absorbed or are they being passed through to borrowers via higher conveyancing fees?
Right.
You do not want your client finding out at the 11th hour that their closing costs just jumped by $500.
Which brings us to the final part of this audit, which is identifying a single point of failure, meaning, do you have concentration risk?
This is the big one.
Now, wait a second. I need to push back on this pretty hard.
Go for it.
In business, loyalty is usually the holy grail, right? If I'm a high-performing broker and I am feeding one specific conveyancer 60% of my files, I get VIP treatment.
Sure you do.
I get my calls answered on the first ring. I get rushed files pushed to the top of the pile. Why is that deep, incredibly profitable relationship suddenly being framed as a toxic single point of failure?
I can hear the protective broker in you coming out, and I love the enthusiasm, but we have to completely reframe how we view that loyalty in the face of a systemic shock.
Okay, reframe it how?
We are wired to think that deep relationships equal safety. But what the article is pointing out is that your VIP treatment vanishes into thin air if that specific firm's compliance engine stalls.
Because they literally can't process the file, even if they want to.
Exactly. If they fail to adapt to tranche 2, or if their new customer due diligence process is poorly designed and just bottlenecks their staff, they cannot legally proceed with your settlements.
Wow.
It doesn't matter how much they like you or how many coffees you've bought them over the years. Regulatory changes force us to rethink loyalty as concentration risk.
That's a great phrase, rethink loyalty as concentration risk.
Right. If 60% of your income relies entirely on one external firm's ability to navigate a massive new federal law, you aren't loyal. You are incredibly vulnerable.
Wow. Okay, that shifts the perspective completely. A bottleneck for them is literally a pay freeze for me. So it's one thing to understand this conceptually, right? To know you need to look out for readiness, friction, fees, and concentration risk.
Sure.
But it's another thing entirely to actually execute it. How do we make this actionable without making our partners feel like they are on trial?
Well, the author provides a very tactical playbook for this. And it revolves entirely around upgrading how you use your CRM. Your customer relationship management software.
Here's where it gets really interesting, because most people just use their CRM as a glorified digital address book.
A place to store emails and phone numbers, yeah.
Exactly. But Jennifer Austin is suggesting we turn it into an early warning radar system.
To do that, you have to add very specific reviewable fields to your partner database. You need to be tracking their AustTrack enrollment status.
Like a literal checkbox.
A checkbox, yeah. You need the date you reviewed their revised engagement letter. You need a flag for any fee schedule changes and an indicator for whether they represent a single point of failure.
And the article mentions tracking their expected post-reform turnaround time. I want to emphasize how functionally important that is.
Oh, it's critical.
Because if I know through my CRM, that conveyancer A is going to take 14 days to process a file under the new rules instead of their usual 5 days, I can actually save the deal.
You can adjust the timeline.
Exactly. I can structure the contract with a 45-day finance clause instead of a 21-day clause. I am using data to manage the lender's expectations, physically preventing the file from timing out and collapsing.
That is the perfect example of how data prevents a pipeline freeze. And once you have those fields built in your CRM, you don't just let them sit there empty.
Right. You have to populate them.
You use them to execute a strict transition plan in May and June. It starts with exporting your active referral partners, categorizing them, and identifying your top contributors by file volume.
Because you have to know who is actually keeping your lights on.
Exactly.
So, practically speaking, I'm looking at my CRM on a Monday morning. I run the export, and I realize three specific accounting firms are attached to most of my complex investment files. What's the next move once I know who my top players are?
You initiate structured outreach. You send a very professional communication asking a few simple questions.
Like what?
What is your enrollment plan? How will your client interactions change? And what are your borrower communications going to look like?
And what if they don't answer? Or what if they sound completely panicked on the phone when I ask?
Then you immediately move to gap filling.
Gap filling, yeah.
If your top contributor ghosts you, you don't wait for July to see if they figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
You actively seek out alternative compliant partners right now to dilute your concentration risk.
You find a backup plan immediately.
Yes. And once your network is solid, you update your own client communications to prepare your borrowers for the extra verification they are going to face from these external parties.
But let me ask you this. If I start sending my key business partners emails with compliance checklists, aren't they going to get incredibly annoyed with me?
People don't love checklists.
Right. Nobody likes a micromanager, especially when everyone is already stressed about this July 1 deadline.
Well, this raises an important question about positioning. The framing here is everything. It isn't an interrogation, it's a demonstration of professional rigor.
Okay, tell me more.
Remember, these partners are navigating a highly stressful transition. If you approach them and say, "Hey, I know July 1 is going to fundamentally change how you operate. I want to make sure I am preparing our mutual clients perfectly so my files don't slow you down."
Oh, that's smart.
Right. You aren't micromanaging them. You are offering them a life raft. You are partnering with them.
You are speaking their language. You are telling them you want to make their job easier.
And that builds incredible trust. The author makes a brilliant strategic point here. The brokers who proactively run this outreach sequence.
The ones who actually do the work.
Yeah, the ones who maintain a tiered, tested network of external partners are actually the ones who are going to win more complex files and grow their business reliably.
Because they aren't dropping the ball.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because in the second half of 2026, when other brokers are frantically apologizing to clients for delayed settlements, fighting with unresponsive conveyancers,
the prepared broker can guarantee a smooth transaction.
They're using this compliance hurdle to build a massive commercial moat around their business.
So fast forward with me for a second.
Okay.
The July 1 deadline hits. The new rules are live. The dust isn't going to settle immediately, obviously. How will the industry know if this transition was a success or if it's an absolute catastrophe as we move into the second half of 2026?
The article highlights three canary in the coal mine metrics to watch.
Okay, what's the first one?
The first is the AUSTRAC enrollment data itself. The agency will publish summary statistics.
Mm-hmm.
If we get to late July and the formal enrollment numbers are sitting at 20,000 out of that expected 100,000 pool,
that's a problem.
It indicates widespread, systemic industry lag that guarantees a very painful, very chaotic third quarter for everyone.
The second metric is AUSTRAC enforcement actions.
Right.
Watching where the regulator drops the hammer first, whether they go after a big real estate agency or a boutique law firm, it sets the practical compliance bar for everyone else.
It shows the market what AUSTRAC actually cares about in practice, not just on paper.
Exactly. But it's the third metric that really caught my eye, the volume of suspicious matter reports submitted by these new Tranche 2 entities.
Ah, yeah. It is the sleeper metric, the suspicious matter reports, or SMRs.
So what does this all mean? If 100,000 new people, accountants, real estate agents, solicitors, are suddenly forced by federal law to actively look for money laundering, isn't that like installing thousands of brand new smoke detectors in a massive building that has never once been inspected?
That is a brilliant way to look at it. Seriously.
Mm.
And if we connect this to the bigger picture, think about who responds when those alarms go off. The lenders. They're the fire department watching the main control panel. If thousands of smoke detectors all trigger at once, the lenders are going to panic.
Right.
They are going to hyper-focus on what is called source of business risk.
Meaning the lenders are going to look down the hallway, see a specific conveyancer's office flashing red with alarms, and just shut down that whole section of the building.
Precisely. Lenders will start heavily scrutinizing where these myth or flagged files are originating from.
Wow.
If a broker is sending files through an accounting firm that is suddenly generating dozens of suspicious matter reports because their new customer due diligence process is unearthing red flags they used to ignore,
the lender might just start rejecting that broker's files entirely.
Yep. The lender doesn't want the regulatory heat. This is why having that audited, tiered referral network is so vital. It proves to the lenders that your pipeline is clean, reliable, and fundamentally de-risked.
It really is a devastating domino effect if you aren't prepared.
It really is.
Think about it. The accountant finds something suspicious in a family trust. They file the mandatory report. The bank's risk department gets spooked. And suddenly, the mortgage broker's entire business model is under a microscope, even though the broker did absolutely nothing wrong and followed all their own rules.
Which brings us right back to our central thesis.
Mm-hmm.
For anyone relying on these newly regulated entities, Tranche 2 is not a compliance problem.
It is a pipeline problem.
Exactly.
This has been incredibly eye-opening. So, to synthesize this for you, learner, the July 1 AUSTRAC Tranche 2 reform isn't just some boring legal update tucked away in the financial pages of a newspaper.
Definitely not.
It is a massive system-wide stress test on the entire Australian real estate and finance ecosystem. Proactive professionals are treating this moment as a rare opportunity to audit their network, test their external dependencies, and build a commercial moat that their competitors simply won't have.
While everyone else scrambles.
Right. Meanwhile, The reactive ones, the ones who think this is just someone else's paperwork problem, are going to spend the rest of the year troubleshooting stalled deals one agonizing week at a time.
It really separates the true business operators from the mere participants in the market.
It really does. And taking a step back, whether you are a mortgage broker listening to this, or a tech worker managing complex API integrations, or even a creative freelancer working with multiple design agencies, this deep dive is a powerful reminder to map out your own ecosystem.
Mapping the ecosystem is huge.
It is. Where are your single points of failure hiding in someone else's workflow? Who are the partners you completely rely on, and are they actually ready for the next big disruption in their own industry?
I want to leave you with one final lingering question to ponder.
Oh, lay it on us.
We've spent all this time talking about the operational friction this will cause for brokers, conveyancers, and legitimate property buyers.
Mm-hmm.
But consider the actual underlying intent of the law. If 100,000 lawyers, accountants, and real estate agents are suddenly forced, under threat of severe federal penalty, to shine a very bright spotlight on the true source of their clients' funds.
Yeah.
Just how much dirty money is about to be unexpectedly unearthed in the Australian property market?
Oh, wow.
And what happens to overall property prices when that hidden, illicit money is suddenly forced to disappear from the bidding pool?
That is a staggering thought. Talk about an invisible tripwire resting right under the bedrock of the entire housing market.
It's going to be fascinating to watch.
Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Keep looking at the systems around you, keep interrogating your single points of failure, and as always, keep asking the big questions.